And good evening, everyone. Welcome to Outbeat Now. I'm Greg Moralia. Jeff Basham is off tonight. Outbeat Now is a public affairs and news program for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay and beyond. And you'll find us here on the fourth Sunday of every month as one of the four monthly Outbeat radio programs airing at 8 p.m. every Sunday and only on KRCB Radio. Well, we have a lot happening tonight, but first you should know that we're in the midst of Pledgetember. That's right, it's our fall pledge drive, and I'd like to take a couple of minutes now to tell you about how important it is for you to be involved. KRCB is a public radio station, which means funding to operate the station comes from donations from listeners like you. You might notice that you never hear a single commercial, ever. So this means that we are free from commercial influence, and that all of your listening time can be spent enjoying hours and hours of one-of-a-kind, locally produced, and commercial-free programming, just like Outbeat. All of us here on the Outbeat radio team are volunteers, but there are still costs associated with bringing you our programming. In fact, KRCB Radio has supported programming for the LGBT community for over 14 years, and now we need your support. I promise it's quick and painless, and no amount is too small to make a big difference. We even have some amazing thank you gifts for your donation, and two in particular that are exclusive offers during tonight's show. In addition to the gift certificates from our basic $40 membership package, if you donate just $10 a month, I would love to send you signed hardcover copies of my two books, Coming Out From Behind the Badge and American Heroes Coming Out From Behind the Badge, both of which contain rarely heard stories from LGBT police, fire, and emergency medical personnel who have come out at work as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. And we also have a CD with a one-hour Outbeat Extra reproduced featuring interviews with LGBT law enforcement officers. You can get the set of two books right now by going online to www.krcb.org/donate, or you can call our 800 number at 800-882-6427. That's 800-882-6427. We have a crew standing by ready to take your call, and thank you for your kind donation and support. All right, now to our show. Well, this weekend, the North Bay premiere of the Laramie Project 10 years later opened at Napa Valley College. This play is an epilogue to the now famous Laramie Project play written and produced by the Tectonic Theater Project back in 1998 about the vicious murder of Matthew Shepard in Laramie, Wyoming. The epilogue revisits the people of Laramie to see what's changed over the last 10 years. So tonight we begin by talking with Tectonic Theater Project member Greg Pirotti, who was one of the writers and actors in both plays. Greg will share with us his experience and talk about his interview with Aaron McKinney, which is featured in the second act of this new play. He was one of the murderers who is now serving a double life sentence in prison. And then in the Outbeat Youth segment, we go on location to Napa Valley College and talk with the student cast members of the Laramie Project 10 years later, as well as the play's director, Professor Jennifer King. All of that and more right after the Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, September 23rd, 2012. It was 1 year ago this week that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and gays, lesbians, and bisexuals were finally allowed to join or openly serve in the military. President Obama issued the following statement about the anniversary. 1 year ago today, we upheld the fundamental American values of fairness and equality by finally and formally repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Gay and lesbian Americans no longer need to hide who they love in order to serve the country they love. It is a testament to the professionalism of our men and women in uniform that this change was implemented in an orderly manner, preserving unit cohesion, recruitment, retention, and military effectiveness. As Commander-in-Chief, I've seen that our national security has been strengthened because we no longer deny the skills and talents of those patriotic Americans who happen to be gay or lesbian. The ability of service members to be open and honest about their families and the people they love honors the integrity of the individuals who serve, strengthens the institutions they serve, and is one of the many reasons our military remains the finest in the world. In the 12 months since the repeal, many memorable events have taken place, everything from Airman Randy Phillips filming himself coming out to his father, to the first gay civil union on a military base. And here locally, the Russian River Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence will stage the Rocky Horror Sister Show. It's a journey through the weird and wonderful world of sistering as seen through the lens of a crazed Rocky Horror fan. Dress up as your favorite character and participate in one of the most unique shows the West County has ever seen. The Russian River Sisters Choir will engage the audience by taking them on an adventure through the world of sisterhood. The Rocky Horror Show, a perennial favorite, is the backdrop for this journey, and the Sisters Choir will have you begging for more. The lips will be expertly portrayed by Sister Prudence Improper. The most luscious kissable lips in the order will serenade you with science fiction double feature. Brad and Janet, fleshed out by Sister Yoda and Sister Vivacious, will be adorable while belting out "Damn it, Janet." The talented show will give you a reason to light up when they sing "Over the Frankenstein Place," which was featured at the Sisters' Red Dress Party earlier this year. Sisters Prudence and Viv will tantalize you with a big and beautiful striptease during the hot, hot, hot rendition of "Toucha, Toucha, Toucha Me." The Fabulous Four show will kick off with the rocker Rose Tint, featuring four stunning sisters in feather boas and little else. This production will take place at the Rio Theater, 20396 Bohemian Highway in Monterio, on Saturday, October 20th. Proceeds will be split between the Community Holiday Dinner Fund and the Sisters Operating Fund. Tickets are on sale now through Brown Bag Tickets for $20 a person, and a number of tickets will be available at the door. For more information, go to www.brownpapertickets.com/event/262339. And of course, you can always learn more at the Sisters website, rrsisters.org. And from Napa, the Napa LGBTQ Project will hold the second annual LGBTQ Community Forum on National Coming Out Day, Thursday, October 11th. Last year, the inaugural forum drew 200 members from the community who talked about the needs of the LGBT community in Napa County. Several initiatives were identified, including the need for an LGBT center. This year's forum will focus on what the center should look like. LGBTQ Project Ian Stanley said that they're looking for volunteers to help set up, facilitate small group discussions, and much more. If you're interested in getting involved, please give them a call at 707-251-9432. This year's forum will be held at McPherson Elementary School, 2670 Yohome Street in Napa, starting at 6:30 p.m. And again, that's on Thursday, October 11th, and everyone is welcome. You can learn more at www.napalgbtqproject.org. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, September 24th at 7:30 p.m., PFLAG Santa Rosa Support Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Monday at 7:30, the Positive Images Adult Support Group will meet at 1023 4th Street, Suite C in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, September 25th, from 1:30 to 3:30, the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Male to Female Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street. And on Wednesday, September 26th, from 5 to 6:30 p.m., the Youth Support Group will meet at the Spectrum LGBT Center, 30 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Say it, say it, say it. Tell it like it is. In 2008, 10 years after the murder of Matthew Shepard, members of the Tectonic Theater Project returned to Laramie, Wyoming to talk with many of the people they first met in 1998 while writing and producing the Laramie Project play. These new conversations are acted out in the epilogue to the Laramie Project 10 years later. I had a chance to talk with Greg Pirotti, one of the writers and actors in both plays, about his experience returning to Laramie. Here's what he had to say. Well, Greg, tell us how you believe the Laramie Project, from your perspective, has changed the country.
Well, I mean, I think that the Laramie Project itself has made a great impact on a grassroots level in a lot of communities. But I really do think that it's Matthew's story that's really changed the country, and that we kind of found a very strong and powerful medium to bring Matthew's story in an intimate way into communities. So, I just want to make that distinction, because really it's the power of Matthew's story itself is so amazing, and I think so deeply connected to who Matthew was as a person. Like, everyone we talked to who knew Matthew personally said he had this kind of you know, passion and enthusiasm about human rights and things that I think just translated into the Laramie Project. So having said that, I think the main way that the Laramie Project has made an impact on the country is because it's a theater piece and because it's something that communities can take hold of and make their own, and it sparks conversation in a way, you know, because people actually get involved. It's, you know, it was made for HBO as well, and I think that the HBO movie has had a powerful impact because it just keeps Matthew's story alive in mainstream media to a certain degree. But there's something about the actual play when it's taken on by a community that, so let's say it's done in a high school. High school students will start to work on the text. They'll get familiar with Matthew's story probably for the first time. They'll have completely mind-changing experiences related to their own language and their own way of relating to queer people in their school or in their culture. And that will ripple out to their families, to their friends who aren't in the production, and then ultimately to the community that comes to see the play. And the level of personal responsibility and personal commitment that I've seen, particularly in high school students when I've gone to see the production, they're so blown away that this could happen, and by Matthew's story and by just the whole broad scope of issues that come with Matthew's story, that they get so personally invested. And that personal investment on the personal part of the high school or college student who's actually doing the work is what sort of impacts the community. So it has this kind of grassroots trickle-out effect, and I think what it does more than anything else is create conversation about these really still very important issues in communities around the country.
I'm just curious, when Moises Kaufman first posed this idea back in 1998 of going to Laramie and exploring what had just happened with the murder of Matthew Shepard, what was going through your mind? What were you expecting to happen?
Well, you know, when we first went out, we really had no idea what to expect. And in fact, we did not go out with the intention of writing a play. We went out to see if a play could be written. So the entire first trip was an exploration of whether there was something, some story there to tell. And I really didn't go out there with a lot of expectation around what the artistic product would be. You know, Lee Fondakowski and I were the first people to go to Laramie. We went out ahead of the rest of the company. And, I mean, my feelings were much more about my own personal relationship to the crime and to the situation, you know, and my anxiety about going to Laramie, because when I first went to Laramie, my kind of uneducated thinking was, oh my gosh, you know, it was what the media was kind of portraying them as. It was like, oh my gosh, here's this, you know, terrible town where they kill homosexuals, you know,
right.
And I was very afraid. I mean, Lee's lesbian and I'm gay, and I remember we were coming over the mountain pass, you know, on Route 80 between Cheyenne and Laramie, and as we came over the pass and saw, you know, what we refer to later in the play as the twinkling lights of Laramie, Wyoming, we had been chatting and laughing and talking. You know, we were just actually getting to know each other as collaborators at that time. And we came over the pass and we saw Laramie and we both felt dead silent. And I know we were just both terrified, you know, personally terrified. And I mean, that view of Laramie changed rather rapidly. But I think all of us in the company were more just thinking about our own personal relationship to the story at that point. And it wasn't until actually we had collected all of the material and returned to New York and actually spent time in a workshop creating an initial reading, which bared very little resemblance to what the play ultimately ended up being. And we performed that, you know, or did a reading of that for our colleagues, our friends and colleagues in the New York theater world. And they really gave us the mandate. You know, we were so in the material and immersed. I mean, we knew we were interested, but we still really didn't have any notion of like, oh my gosh, can this be done? And then we read what we created, you know, kind of in our isolated experience. And it was the people who came to see the reading that said, wow, this is incredibly powerful content and material, and it's your obligation to make this play happen.
And what an amazing production it turned out to be. Well, in 2008, you and some of your fellow cast members had a chance to return to Laramie to re-interview a lot of the people that you met the first time. Tell us about what you found.
Well, I mean, it was different again for me because I stayed in such close contact with a lot of people over the last 10 years in Laramie that I actually knew a lot of what was going down in the community. But I think it was pretty stunning to actually arrive there and directly experience how many people and with how much passion Matthew's story was being rearticulated as either a drug deal gone bad or a robbery gone bad. It was really disheartening. I mean, you know, right there in the middle of Laramie, Wyoming, where it all happened, there was just this preference to understand the crime in that way. And, you know, I mean, it's been clear from the beginning that robbery had something to do with it, that was an element of the crime. But it was definitively proven right there in the midst of that community that this was not a drug deal gone bad and that it was a hate crime. It was proven in their own courthouse in the middle of downtown Laramie, Wyoming. And people just like edited that information out of their collective memory. And it was really, really distressing. And for me, you know, a really vivid example of the damaging effects of covert homophobia that exists in our culture all over, not just in Laramie, but everywhere. I mean, they're just representative of so much of the United States. And there's just so much covert homophobia. I mean, it's just much more convenient to think of the crime as a robbery gone bad or a drug deal gone bad, because then we don't have to examine the fact that, you know, Matthew was killed because he was gay and that's something that these kids learned in that community. It was stunning, you know. I mean, and there was some great stuff that happened as well. You know, there was the bench dedication. There's been a lot of kind of personal transformation in the gay community. There's the Matthew Shepard, I can't remember what it's called now, but the Matthew Shepard Forum, where people come and speak about civil rights.
Oh, the Center for Social Justice?
Yes. And that's named after Matthew Shepard now, and they have a symposium every year under his name. And so that's remarkable. And, you know, there are a lot of really wonderful things that have happened.
Well, one of the interviews that you did in the epilogue that I find absolutely gripping every time I read it is your interview with Aaron McKinney, the really primary aggressor and murderer of Matthew Shepard. What was that like, sitting down face to face with him and having that conversation?
You know, I was nervous, but I wasn't terrified or anything. I mean, I felt completely, you know, like, well, we're in a prison visiting center and there's a guard right there and all that stuff. But I was nervous, but I was also really, really curious to talk to Aaron directly and find out what his direct experience was, because I really had no information about that except the little bit of his, you know, trial testimony that's on tape in the trial transcripts, and, you know, the kind of just seeing him sort of in that really kind of spaced out, completely oblivious mind state that he seemed to be in every time that I saw him in the courtroom, you know. So I was really, really eager to hear what he had to say. And, you know, it was pretty intense talking to him, because I don't know. I mean, I really believe that people have the capacity, you know, that people are intrinsically good. And so, and I do believe that. I still believe that. I believe that about people. But, you know, I just realized that while I think that that's true, it was really naive of me to kind of think that it's easy to get to that place for certain people. And, you know, it was really, really difficult for me to see the lack of remorse that Aaron experienced for what he did. You know, I mean, I just... And I understand, like, remorse is not a high it's not a, like a strong sort of, there's not a lot of value placed on remorse in prison culture. In fact, it's considered a weakness. So obviously, you know, you need to toughen up and armor up and all that stuff, you know. And I mean, I think metaphorically, it's interesting that over the years, you know, like Aaron's encased himself more and more in all these tattoos and stuff. Like, you know, he's really armoring himself up. But it was really disappointing and disheartening to me to see that he, you know, had no capacity to access that part of himself that would recognize that this was wrong, you know, that like he just couldn't get there, you know. And I mean, he has the capacity for remorse because he felt remorseful and guilty that he dragged Russell into the situation and feels personally responsible for, you know, getting Russell, ruining Russell's life, basically. And he felt remorse for that. He felt remorse for disappointing his father. So, you know, he has that capacity and he just has no ability to experience that around Matthew and what he did. And I spent a long time trying to get him to say that he was remorseful. And, you know, when I read the transcripts of the entire, you know, not everything is in the scene, but when I read the transcripts of the entire interview, I mean, I kind of am struck by my own naivete. It's like, dude, give it up. This guy is not going to go there, you know? And, you know, I just keep trying to get him to say that he is because I wanted him to be, you know? Right, and it's just like, it just wasn't happening, you know? And, yeah, it was really, really hard for me, that part of it.
Was he eager to meet with you?
I don't think he was eager to meet with me. I think he was curious to meet with me because, you know, I got the introduction to him through Father Roger Schmidt, who is, you know, a character in the Laramie Project and also was kind of the person who tried to attend to Aaron's spiritual needs when he was incarcerated in Laramie while he was awaiting for his sentencing. While he was awaiting his sentencing, you know, he was raised Catholic, and so Father Roger had heard about that, I think, from one of the defense attorneys who was also Catholic, told Father Roger this kid was a Catholic, you know, and he doesn't have anybody talking to him. So Father Roger spent a long time talking to him, and, you know, I mean, I think it's pretty apparent in the text of the Laramie Project that Father Roger is a very compassionate and loving man, and I think he probably one of the few people in you know, Aaron's life, you know, was loving towards him. So Aaron really loves Father Roger. Father Roger wrote on my behalf saying, "Will you talk to Greg?" And I think he was, you know, curious to see me because I'm close to Father Roger.
Did you get a sense from talking to Aaron that he has any idea about how much worldwide awareness there is about what he did?
I mean, I know he knows it's a big story. It's more context for him. Like, I think he doesn't really understand the context of it. Like, to him, it's just like he's this guy who's seen. I mean, he says it in the scene that I wrote. He's like, you know, like he's complaining about how he's the poster child for gay hate crime murders. You know, so it's for him, it's more about, you know, how, you know, what kind of effect that has on the life of Aaron McKinney, and what that means in the life of Aaron McKinney. Like, it's big in that sense, if that makes sense. It's not, to him, I don't think he has any way of conceiving that it's big in, like, all of these social and political senses as well. Like, that doesn't have any meaning to him. Like, he knows there was a movie made, he knows that he's in it, you know, it's, he doesn't really have a kind of sophisticated view of how complex the world is, so I don't think he experiences it that way, you know.
And I don't imagine that in prison he's ever had the chance to see either, even the HBO version of the Laramie Project.
No, I don't think he has seen it. He, you know, there's also that heinous 2020 episode that was done and that we treat in the epilogue. You know, just heinous and completely irresponsible on every level. I mean, it shouldn't even be called news or whatever they were calling it. But basically, he was aware of it as, like, you know, Doc O'Connor at one point implies that he and Aaron McKinney and someone else had a three-way. And you know, so for Aaron, like, that's how he's aware of it. He's like, because all his friends tease him about having a three-way with Doc O'Connor. So for him, what's really offensive and reprehensible is that it was suggested that he might be a homosexual. And then the only other thing I just feel like I have to say is that, I mean, I know there's a huge amount of awareness, as you say, about what Aaron did. In, you know, worldwide, there's a high awareness of that. I don't really think there's an awareness of Aaron, like, of, you know, I don't think there's been any attention given to it. I don't think anyone's really tried to investigate, you know, what makes these kinds of crimes happen and why these kids felt like this was okay. Like, I don't think that there is any awareness of Aaron McKinney and who he is and what his story is and, you know, why that should matter. Like, I think people have this notion, like, he's this really terrible person who committed a heinous hate crime, and that's true. But, like, that's the... There's no real depth of understanding about who Aaron was.
You've been listening to my conversation with Tectonic Theater Project member and playwright Greg Pirati. Before we take a music break, I want to invite you to once again step up and support KRCB Radio by going online or making a call right now with your donation. We need the LGBT community here in the North Bay to come out and to help us keep all of the unique, locally produced shows like Outbeat Radio on the air. For tonight's show only, we have a really special thank you gift for your donation of just $10 a month. We have 4 tickets to Cruising the Castro Walking Tour, a top-rated tour by TripAdvisor. If you've never explored the Castro's rich history, this is a chance to stroll through the neighborhood with a very knowledgeable historian who will tell you all about how the Castro came to be the world-renowned LGBT neighborhood. This is really an amazing opportunity, and it can be all yours for supporting KRCB and Outbeat Radio. To make your donation, go online right now to krcb.org/donate, or simply give us a call at 800-882-6427. That's 800-882-6427. And we'll be right back with the Outbeat You segment right after the music break.
You were the brightest angel heaven had ever seen. You walked in with a story to tell and 10,000 tongues to scream. And you said,
doesn't your heart beat the same as mine? Haven't I told you a thousand times?
Isn't the air in my lungs the same? Heaven help me, for I am lost. What a price my love did cost. But here I am standing strong, and I am free. Didn't we share the same sunrise? Didn't we sleep in the same? The same blood you bleed, so who cares? Whose arms I'm all wrapped up in? Who cares? Whose arms I'm in myself? see my mother cry like everyone. My father grieves for his lonely son. But isn't my rainbow a little brighter?
That was Randy Driscoll and the LA Gay Men's Choir with Randy's original song, What Matters. Randy wrote this song as a tribute to Matthew Shepard shortly after his murder in 1998. You're listening to KRCB FM Windsor Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. Good evening and welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia, and we're coming to you live on location tonight from the Performing Arts Center at Napa Valley College, where student actors are in the midst of their opening weekend for the play, The Laramie Project, 10 years later. Now, what's really exciting about this production is that Napa Valley College is the first theater company to perform this play at a college in California. Now, you may know about the original Laramie Project play, written and produced in 1998 by the Tectonic Theater Project following the vicious murder of Matthew Shepard in Laramie, Wyoming. High schools, colleges, and professional theater companies have been producing this play for the last 10 years, making it one of the most famous plays in history. And in 2008, members of the Tectonic Theater Project returned to Laramie to interview the people of the town about what had changed, and they produced an epilogue called The Laramie Project, 10 years later. And here to tell us more about the production is Professor Jennifer King, who's also the play director. Jennifer, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Well, tell us a little bit about this play and why you chose to bring it here to Napa Valley College this fall.
Well, 3 years ago, you and I did a reading at the Napa Valley Opera House to memorialize the 10th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death. And at that time, we did an edited version of the Laramie Project. And at the same time, there are productions of the Laramie Project 10 years later being read all over the country. We were one of two theaters that were selected to read the play itself. The Laramie Project, and Judy Shepard was with us. We produced the Laramie Project, a full production, 10 years ago, and it seemed only fitting that we do the Laramie Project 10 years later, 10 years after our first production. And so it felt like it feels like this is the right thing to do at the right time.
And I couldn't agree more. So let's go back for a moment to 2002 when you did the original Laramie Project. Describe for us how the college reacted. I mean, how did the greater community of Napa respond to that play?
Well, I call that production the reason I got the full-time position at Napa Valley College, because I don't think the community had, both the campus community and the greater community, had experienced this type of work on this college campus. And what I mean by that is I think it was the first time that we really embraced dialogue with our community. After each performance, we had a discussion, and the community members wanted to share their stories. In fact, we have a cast member from the original production, and we discussed how the cast really wanted to talk about how they were actors in the production, how they had to prepare, and all their actory stuff. Well, the community didn't give doo-doo about that. And what they wanted to hear, what they want to do, was share their own stories of what it is to well, to grow up gay in Napa or to have family members that grow up gay in Napa and what the climate is like in Napa. And that was 10 years ago. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the, well, it's already been very interesting as to the dialogue that has gone on. And we look forward to deeper discussions as we go through the run.
Great. Yeah, well, and the epilogue revisits Laramie to see what's changed since Matthew Shepard was murdered. You know, tell us about how you plan to explore that kind of change with this play here at the college and in Napa. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think what we have is a wonderful opportunity in our department itself. We have a class called Diversity in American Drama, where the students are actually reading the Laramie Project and they're exploring what the play means to them, and then they'll see the epilogue. But I think on a larger scale, what we're doing is we're producing the play in our studio theater, our brand new studio theater. It's only 2 years old, and the acoustics are such that you literally can whisper and the audience hears you. And for the first time, we are staging a play in the round, and my goal is to create a town sort of town hall feel. We have a local celebrity guest narrator at each performance reading the narration from a strategic place in the house. And really what I want to evoke is the sense that Napa is Laramie and Laramie is Napa. And so the audience really is in the play. They are not away from it. They are in it with everyone. And there is direct address from the actors, but I will say that audience members don't need to worry about participating during the show. That comes afterwards, because again, we are doing post-show discussions. But I think that that is the sense that I really wanted to create, is almost a circular feel of we are one and the same. And Napa isn't so very different, as we explored in our rehearsal process, as Laramie itself. We are, in a sense, a college town. May not be a university town, but we are a college town. We are a place that likes to sometimes stay a little hidden. And I think we're finally starting to open some doors in this community, and that's really exciting.
Fantastic. And we are, in fact, in this beautiful, brand-new performing arts center here at the college, and in a very unique space. And it's very, very exciting to see, you know, this type of facility being used for such dramatic impact. So I'm surrounded by cast members here in the round. And so we're going to talk with them a little bit and ask about their involvement in the play and what their experience has been like so far. And there's so many of them here. Instead of trying to introduce everybody and remember everybody's names, as I come around and ask you a question, just introduce yourself and then give us your thoughts. What brought you to audition for this play?
Well, first of all, my name is Dawn Johnson, and I play Marge Murray. I'm doing Judy Shepard, and I'm also doing Kathleen Connolly in the play. And what drew me to it is that I think change needs to happen, not only in this community, but as a nation, we need to make some change. And this is just my little part of trying to help that happen.
Hi, my name is Mikkel Simons, and what brought me to the Laramie Project 10 years later was pretty much what Dawn said. There's a lot of issues out there that need to be brought up, and it being an election year, it seems really important to talk about these things and get it out to the public.
Hi, I'm Christian. I'm an openly gay male in Napa County. I grew up here. It was important for me to be a part of this project because I think 10 years after Laramie, there was still not just the same climate here in Napa, a very similar climate, but across the country. Where we're now seeing a change with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and reforms where it's more accepted. Also in our media, if you see shows like Modern Family or Glee, where there's, it seems, these popular shows, as opposed to shows that were kind of not as mainstream, making their way onto television. Whereas we have Napa, that's very closed environment, seems very similar to Laramie. So I wanted to be a part of this production and kind of be a part of change in this town through our performance and through our storytelling.
Richard Palaciol, I saw the production here in Napa of the Laramie Project 10 years ago, and I was so moved as an audience member. I don't think I recall being as moved watching a theatrical performance. And then a couple of years ago, or a year or two ago, we did People's Temple here, and I was lucky to be enough to be in that. Again, a similar theatrical piece, which is documentary in style. And the reaction from the audience was just overwhelming, the way it resonates with each person. So when there was the chance to do this project much in the same line, and again, from the same wonderful director, you'd jump at the chance as an actor to be involved in something like that.
Great. So I want to hear from some of you about the different characters you're playing, because one of the unique things I think about the Laramie Project, both the original and this production, is you're playing multiple characters. The Tectonic Theater Project did it that way, and of course you're doing the same. So some of you that have got multiple characters, multiple personalities, if you will.
Hi, I'm Linda Howard, and I'm playing, the main character I'm playing is Reggie Flutie, who was the policewoman who was the first on the scene to find Matthew. And I was also lucky enough to be in the production 10 years ago that we did here, and I also played that part. So it's really exciting to be able to do that part. And when you all come to see the show, you're going to see how awesome this character is, and that she gets to express a lot of the same things I feel about what we need to do and think about as individuals and as a community. So I get to do that part, which is great. And I also get to play Russell Henderson's grandmother.
I'm Heather Brink, and I'm playing Romaine Patterson and Zaki Salmons. You know, I think most interesting about doing this production is playing real people, and you actually have the opportunity to, you know, make contact with these people and read about their lives. And I think that's, you know, one of the, as an actor at least, I think that's pretty remarkable to be able to play somebody who's here that you can actually ask questions and you know, get feedback from. It's just pretty remarkable.
So let's run with that a little bit. As we talk about some of the characters you're playing, give us a little bit of insight as to what type of research you've done to be able to get in touch with those characters or find out about them. I mean, it's been 10 years. I would imagine it's been a little bit difficult to get a hold of some of the folks.
She actually has a website posted, which I've been stalking her, you know, mostly, and listening to her radio show and all that to get... and that's primarily, I mean, what I've been doing is just looking at her radio shows, which is interesting because her at 20 when the first one and her now are almost two different people, really. And Laramie 10 years later kind of falls somewhere. She's somewhere in the middle of those two.
This is Dawn Johnson again. I haven't spoken to any of their characters, but I have done some research. I have actually seen many, many videos of Judy Shepherd speak, and I'm amazed at her composure and her ability to just voice herself and what has happened in her life and how it's changed her, but not only changed her, but how she changes the world by what has happened to her. And it's just amazing, you know, to watch her speak and see the changes that she's made. And I've also done some research on Kathy Conley, and we've talked a lot about how there's kind of the trickle down effect of when something like this happens. And I'm not sure Kathy Conley would have gone into any type of office if this wouldn't have happened. She certainly has made a stand and made a stand for gay and lesbian, transgender, and that type of thing, which is pretty amazing. So I've done some research on that. And I also get a chance to play Reggie Flutie's mom. Marge Murray has since passed. And I've looked at a lot of pictures, and what a family woman she was. And it's really neat to see that, because I feel like I'm that kind of same type of person. And she was very proud of her daughter, and that was a really neat thing to see.
So I have a couple of favorite characters. I'll ask if anybody's playing them. How about Father Roger?
That was Richard Palaciol again. I'm just amazed by the level of commitment and the change that Father Roger has gone through from Laramie Project to Laramie Project 10 years later. A remarkable character in his own right, let alone mixed in with all of these other wonderful people. I was thinking about this on doing the research for all of the characters. It would be so hard as an actor to do this kind of research 10 years ago or 15 years ago. The explosion of material that's on the web, at first just finding pictures on people was remarkable. And now everything's on video. YouTube is amazing. This kind of thing, I don't know how people would have done it 10 years ago, to be honest. It's a different world for doing research on documentary style pieces.
And of course, you know, one of the most powerful scenes, I think, in this production comes in the second act when Greg Pirotti sits down and talks with Aaron McKinney. Who's playing Greg and who's playing Aaron? Tell me about your experience researching Greg.
Adam Palafox, playing Greg Pirotti. Well, one of the things that I did as soon as I got cast is I dug all over the place to look for Greg Pirotti and listen to how he speaks and how it affected him. One of the things that I found really fascinating with Greg is how he tried to stay out of trying to sway the people he was interviewing. He just wanted the truth. And the ability not to judge the people he was speaking with, and the courage it took, not just for 10 years later, but the original piece, talking to these people about this town where they had been ravaged by reporters and journalists that just wanted to sensationalize a story. You're going into a place that's very defensive about it. And even 10 years later, when people are bringing it up again, it was really interesting. It was very, very hard. The hardest part I had was when he was talking. I actually found a video of Mr. Perotti talking about interviewing Aaron McKinney. And that was really hard. Just how he spoke about how cold Aaron was when he was describing what had happened, like people describe going shopping. And it was just so hard to hear that. And at one point, he actually, when he was talking about it, when Greg Perotti was talking to the interview about this incident, about the what happened, and Mr. Perotti said that at one point he felt like he couldn't even speak because of hearing just the coldness from Mr. McKinney.
So to the rest of you, as you were reading the script and considering maybe what parts to audition for, just kind of going through the whole story, tell us a little bit about how the story, this epilogue, impacted you personally.
Hi, Heather Brink again. You know, I had very personal reasons for auditioning for the show. I grew up in a family that's very religious. Members of my family are very religious. You know, I have someone very close to me who's gay and is still in the closet. And my goal in doing the show was to start a dialogue in my own direct family to try and create an environment where people can be themselves.
Robert Ceballos. I'm playing primarily Dave O'Malley. And, you know, just to piggyback a little bit on what Heather was saying, I was raised around a fairly religious community. And I grew up around a certain degree of homophobia. And my sister's gay. And it was, as I read the script, I was very moved by reading how Dave O'Malley had been transformed by this experience. And there was a comment that he made about being, you know, having to go through the experience of a young man dying and being brutally beaten to finally open up his mind and change. And, you know, I'm very grateful that I didn't have to go through that experience. But, you know, watching my sister come out and the difficulty that she had with my family and the various friends that I've made over the years who are gay, you know, I think it's very important that as a society we're more accepting and that we open our minds more. And I saw my participation in this play as an opportunity to voice that and to help people, you know, on that journey to opening their minds.
Hi, I'm Alexis Pierce. I wasn't too familiar with the Matthew Shepard story before becoming a part of this project. And I think just going through the whole thing, it sort of opened my eyes. I mean, I always felt that I was a very open person, and I've never had any, I mean, in my family, I haven't had anybody who was completely closed off to people being gay or anything like that. So I haven't really come at it with that experience, but just seeing the level of hate that is out there and is possible was earth shattering. And, we watched as sort of a, it's the word I'm looking for, research. Yeah. For research, we watched that 2020 episode that tried to pass off this horrendous hate crime as just a drug deal gone bad. The feelings I had about that, I didn't know I could have those feelings or felt that strongly, but after being a part of this production, I feel like I've grown and just, I want to do something. I want to make a difference. And at least in my life, I want to make sure that nobody around me has that kind of hatred. I want to hopefully influence somebody or at least surround myself with people who are accepting and good people.
For me, this show or this play has changed me in a lot of ways. I never thought I could feel so deeply about someone I never met. And for someone like Matthew to make such an impact on what we're doing, and one of the reasons I got into theater and wanted to do plays was to do something so powerful. And this is what this show has done. It's really given me the courage to stand up for what is right and not be afraid to voice, you know, when something's not right. And I have such a strong connection to not only Laramie 10 years later, but the original Laramie Project, because I worked on the original one at a different school, and I had to do all the research for it. So when Rick was talking about how do people do research 10 years ago, I spent time in a lot of libraries and looking at newspapers, and somehow ended up coming up with a lot of the crime scene photos, and it really destroyed me.
So as all of you look out now at the coming productions, the next two weekends now that you have, what are your hopes for how this play will impact the college community here in Napa and the greater community? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people that are going to be coming in to see this, not only just from the college, but from the greater Napa area. What are your hopes? You know, you've talked a little bit about your own journeys here, but what do you hope will happen for the community?
My name's Kyle Stoner, and one of the things I think that's so important about this story and this play is that it has the capacity to open a dialogue about these kind of things. And it's because it's about a town that's at odds with, in denial with its own homophobia. And for me, I come from a background where my father and my uncle are identical twins, and one of them's gay, who was kind of like disowned by my grandfather. And there's just this like subtle homophobia. And it's this kind of like cultural vibe that just happens under the surface. And when it's left unchecked is when it turns into this disgusting, violent hatred. And what's so important about the way this play exposes that is that it shows people conversations that they may find themselves having, and it shows what that, where it leads. And I think it's important for people to see that this kind of, if you leave these things unchecked, they have a very real effect.
I just want to say that why I think this is remarkable is the fact that it's a theater piece. And I do believe that people come to the theater to see themselves, either consciously or unconsciously. And so again, when they're looking at this play, when they're watching these phenomenal actors do their work, they're actually seeing themselves. And I think that has a profound effect on them because it causes them to spend time reflecting on their own choices and their own behaviors and what their life experience has been like.
It's Jessica Lesh again. I think for me, one of the things, and it touches on what Kyle said, is, and I think as actors, for all of us, we're hoping to spark discussion and theaters to make people think and to feel. We did a lot of as a cast, talking about this play and talking about what we were putting into it and what we wanted to come out of it. And one of the discussions, slightly heated, but it was about what makes a friendly community and what makes a community homophobic and what makes it not. And we had a discussion about is Napa a homophobic community? And, you know, everybody said no. And then the question was, really, how many gay people do you see walking down the street holding hands? And so if we can answer that question, not just to think about it, but to start talking about what we specifically can do to make this community and all communities one where everybody feels safe and welcome, I think for me personally, that's the kind of discussion I'd like to have.
And I don't know how many of you saw the article in the Register or even read a story online. We reported this on Outbeat News, but Napa was listed as the second most tolerant city in the United States. So give me some thoughts about that.
This is Christian Avar again. I grew up in this city as a gay boy, and you know, developed. There was nothing in my development as an adult that showed me that being a homosexual in this community was tolerated or accepted. It's very similar to what the people of Laramie say when they say that. You know, let them, what's the saying? Let live or live and let live. So you mind your own business, and as long as they're not flaunting it around, which is something so hard for just to ask humans to do, because if you have affections towards someone, or if you have a significant other, you're going to want to show it and kind of show them off in public, which you're not really, you don't see much of here in town. I think it is starting to get better because there's a more of a commercialization happening in downtown Napa.
Well, I'm certain that this play will certainly help Napa continue to grow as a community in a really good way. We've been talking with the cast of the Laramie Project 10 years later here at Napa Valley College. Performances will continue for the next 2 weekends on Friday and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and on Sundays at 2 p.m. Tickets are $15 for students, seniors, and military veterans, $20 for general admission, and you can order them online at napavalleytheater.org. Now, if you'd like to be my guest at next Saturday's performance, I have 2 tickets for the 8 p.m. show on September 29th. Just give the KRCB studios a call right now at 707-584-2020, 584-2020, and those tickets will go to caller number 3. And that also wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Now. But before I say goodnight, I want to remind you once again that you still have an opportunity to show your support for KRCB and Outbeat Radio during this fall pledge drive. Go online now to krcb.org/donate or simply call 800-882-6427. That's 800-882-6427. Remember, no amount's too small to make a big difference. Jeff and I will be back next month on the 4th Sunday of October with another edition of Outbeat Now. And I'll be back next Sunday with Gary Carnevale for a special Outbeat Extra. We'll be talking about some of the many issues that you will be considering on this November's ballot. Join us at 8 p.m. next Sunday night right here on KRCB FM Windsor Santa Rosa. And in the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us.